We are gathered here today in remembrance of our long-lost friend, the format we've had forever and loved more than any other, Legacy, has finally died. It's official. We're now laying her to rest beneath the ground-up remains of all these Fallen Empires cards, and we'll scatter the ashes of Duel Lands to the Seven Winds, and, you know, lament that we only get to play Modern with Eldrazi now. Wizards have sworn to never ban a single Eldrazi card or card with the word Eldrazi in it, because...
Not dead yet.
What? Who?
What? No, not dead yet.
I swear you're dead. No, we got them. Everyone on the internet says you're dead. That's as good as death certificate.
But I'm waving my arm. Can't you see? Not dead yet.
I don't know. I heard you were pretty sick.
No.
You sure?
Yeah, no, not yet.
Sure you're not dead?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Anyone want to have a legacy tournament? Ladies and gentlemen, this is Not Another Magic Podcast. That is John Celso, and also giggling on the line is Pat Yugbo of Leaving a Legacy.
What's going on, man?
I should say John Celso, formerly of Tap and Sack Podcast.
Yeah, or in some some limbo-ish state.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, I was like, ooh, a new episode of Tap and Sack, and I was like, nothing about Celso in this, and then, like, I listened to, like, 10 minutes, and I'm like, Celso's not actually on this cast again.
Yeah, well, it looks like you still got a really good partner in DJ IRL, and the cast is going well, so I'm glad to see it going. And
keep that brand alive.
Oh, yeah, keeping the brand alive. And they make some good chemistry, so I'm really good to hear them continuing to go. I think they're pushing 150, somewhere along those lines. So that's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I'm still looking forward to them, so Wizards actually printing a bear with a tap and sack.
Hey, any bear card, I will welcome. More so than these supposed alleged Eldrazi lords that people are welcoming.
Yeah.
Bear lords is what we need.
Yeah. Yeah, Thought Not Serious, like, I'm a hate bear, but I'm a 4/4, and I'm an Eldrazi.
Is there a bear lord somewhere printed? You guys have a much better knowledge of some of the stuff than I do, but is there a bear that buffs other bears?
Kesa's probably as close as we get, but Kesa's not even really... You don't really see bears, but she's like a... Green creature,
yeah, she's a
lord.
Green lord. Yeah, everyone's got adaptive automaton, but you know,
I feel like a bear that buffs bears.
What about, did Kamal wear like a bear thing, like Kamal Fist of Cursa?
I mean, he just overruns, so you know, that's all you need, really.
Yeah, looks like he's wearing some sort of a fur. Can potentially be looked at as like a wearing a bearskin rug or something. Potentially.
And we, I know we don't talk about Surak around you, so.
I was gonna ask if that card, like, pained you.
Well, many people have shared that card with me. I'm glad we ended that world by punching dragons instead.
Yeah. Alright, so, as the resident bear expert, which bears do you think will get reprinted in Eternal Masters? Because, yay, waste of speculation. Might as well be about something like random, like bear.
I don't know if I will predict zero will be reprinted, but if I had a choice, I think everybody needs Party Bear in the set. We need Forest Bear.
Forest Bear, yeah.
Forest Bear, the best bear printed in Magic.
I mean,
look up the art and you'll be happy.
Yeah. We're going all the way back. Is this an opportunity to get a Balduvian Bears reprint? Instead of just like generic Runeclaw bears and stuff.
That's not how bears are built. That bear has huge tits. That doesn't make any sense. That's not how bears work.
But he's got his paws up in the air. He's like, raise the roof.
Yeah, he can hang out with Party Demon.
Yeah, that's why he's Party Bear.
Yeah.
I guess in the world of anthropomorphic bears, they have huge breasts. So, all right. Okay.
Yeah, sure. Those Chinese brown bears. This is quite different beast. Yeah. As for the Balduvia ones, does Watsi even own the art to that card? Does it mean it was pre-5th edition.
Do they own any art anymore? I mean, like...
Man, that's a good question. It would probably get new art either way.
Hmm.
I don't know. I'm personally excited about getting old cards with new art for the sake of vintage artists constructed.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, you're really into that format, huh?
Yeah, and, like, I fucking better because I'm not fucking finishing Vulcan Baga anymore now that his From the Vault Mox Diamond is spiked.
Is that like $100 now?
Yeah.
Ouch.
When it was like $40-$45, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I could put those together over time. I could get those with Puka Points and stuff. Yeah, not when it's twice that.
Jeez.
Ouch.
There's been some crazy, crazy market reactions to the announcement of Eternal Masters.
Yeah, because, I mean, people are smart. Cards that are on the reserve list are not going to go down and are going to go up, because that's what we've seen with, like, the Modern Masters, is the cards that in the format that don't get reprinted, you know, basically double in price, so.
Right.
It's just happening a little preemptively.
I mean, that's assuming that people are going to move heavy into Legacy, because... Mm-hmm. I think the impetus of people moving into Modern after playing Modern Masters is probably a lot higher. There's probably a much higher conversion rate than people who would play Legacy Masters, or Eternal Masters to get into the Legacy format. I think that's a harder sell. So I don't know if a lot of that speculation is going to pay off. To be quite honest with you, I hope it doesn't. I hope it burns them all and we see the duels go back down to where they should be.
Yeah. As we've seen, like, with any spike, things still end up with, like, you know, 20-25% higher than they were before.
Yeah, they all have a price memory.
Yeah. You know? But like, what is it? Null Rod is like absurd now.
Yeah, I had no idea that was on the reserve list. I had no idea it was.
It's the odd Weatherlight Uncommon on the reserve.
Do I dare ask how much that card is now?
That card is $15 mid. I'm sorry, $15 low. But like, okay. I picked up my two copies like maybe like 4 or 5 months ago for like $5 a piece.
Oh yeah, I was expecting the way you were talking about it was like a $40 card all of a sudden.
I mean, it's probably gonna get there, in all honesty, because it's played in a lot of decks. It's a sideboard card for a lot of decks, and it's also played in Vintage, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh yeah, definitely Vintage, because so many Moxen.
As of this moment on TCG, the low is $35, the mid is $73.50, and the high.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, it spiked like today.
Then buy out anybody?
My app is out of date.
That's crazy. God. Yeah, it really, like, for as far as Legacy is concerned, it's really to hate on Sensei's Top and Jit primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even Batterskull. Like, those, like, three cards in the format.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, one of those three is heavily played in said format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've actually gotten to play some Legacy recently, because I have the incredible luxury of a local store that runs Legacy FNM. So, I got to roll out my shallow grave titans, which I built in apparently the wrong order, because I was like, well, I'll get like the sort of the playable cards for it and play with shocks until I can, and then pick up dual lands eventually and slowly. But yeah, well, those are like the non-blue ones, so they're only up like 20% or something. But still, you know, Bayou and all that stuff's creeping up a little. So.
Yeah, they are. I still think we'll see them go back down. I really don't think that this price spike is going to be permanent. I think they'll end up settling a little higher like they always do, but.
Yeah, like the 20-25% bump, like that the non-blue ones have seen, that's pretty reasonable and that'll probably stick. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know, like Plateau is probably going to be like, eh, whatever, who cares?
Yeah. My copy of Badlands that I ran was running in Blue-Red Delver, or rather in Grixis Delver is looking real good right now.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I wanna talk about my fucking deck because it's my fucking podcast, and honestly, that's about all I want to speculate about Eternal Masters at this point.
It's the only thing that's worth speculating, honestly.
Yeah. Though I do think I think we're gonna get slivers. I'm convinced. Just because, like, Tempest Block, Onslaught Block, Time Spiral, Corsets, like, they've covered Magic history, you know, not quite as much as Elves, Merfolk, and Goblins, but after those, like, it's one of the big ones.
Yeah, I'm hoping it plays kind of like a Vintage Masters type set on Magic Online, or almost like a cube set, mm-hmm. where there's going to be like some sweet archetypes that you get to draft. Because I think the point is it's going to be a draft set first. That's why you see a card like Force of Will at Mythic Rare, because you really don't want that picking around in your draft set. Yeah. But
that's why I think we won't see Jit, or however people. I don't think Americans can pronounce it. I think it's technically more like Jit, but it's super subtle and we just don't. Our mouths don't do that.
No, it's Jeet, as in, did you eat? Jeet?
Oh, God.
No, that's how Derek Jeter refers to himself. Like, yeah, Jeets.
I'm the Jeet. But yeah, I think you're probably right there. I don't think we'll see anything too. I mean, maybe Jeet will be printed at Mythic Rare. Maybe. You know what I mean? Like, there are chances that happens. Or like, I think we might see Top in Mythic Rare or something like that, where there's Legacy staples or Cube staples or something like that at a rarity that doesn't, greatly impact the draft set, the draft experience.
Yeah, Eternal Mass is also going to be fun for the a virtual only cube that I have on Qtutor, which is the Mythic only cube.
Oh, nice.
Which was not really functional until the Expeditions, because those all have Mythic symbols. So that gave it all like a real mana base, so you can kind of build like real decks in it. So adding Eternal Masters might that a super thing to at least test draft.
Hmm. That would be sweet.
Yeah. But man, I'm never building that fucker in paper. Holy shit. I need full set Expeditions plus all this other nonsense from like every From the Vault and every, not happening. I'll just Cube Tutor it just to have fun with it. I also, threw into Cube Tutor the reserved list as a cube.
How bad was that?
Let me just pull up a sample pack. That's the best way to do it.
Nice. We're going to do a crack-a-pack with the reserve list.
Yeah, reserve list crack-a-pack.
Snapping off Scheherazade. I don't care. What else is in the pack?
Okay, so we have Bazaar of Wonders. It's a 3-blue-blue enchant world from a Mirage. Bazaar of Wonders comes into play, when it comes into play, remove all lands and all graveyards from the game. Oh, it's not all lands, it's all cards. So it exiles all graveyards, then whenever spell is played, countered it if it has the same name as a card in play or in any graveyard. So it's like really shitty. it's like it does this thing, except it exiles graveyards, so it's harder for it to do that thing. God, that's terrible. See, we got one that could be a pick, Debt of Loyalty. So 1/2 white, regenerate target creature, gain control of that creature.
Okay.
Which I'm not quite sure how the Oracle text works on that now.
Regenerate target creature, you gain control of that creature if it regenerates this way.
Okay, so it has to actually have stuff up. We got Thrall Champion. I'm not even gonna read that. It's like Fallen Empire's Thrall Lord that costs 5 mana. And you can gain control of Thralls. We got a spicy Grim Monolith. We got Talarian Serpent. That's a 7/7 for 7, in blue that during your, at the beginning of your upkeep, put the top 7 cards of your library into your graveyard. You got a big green fatty, Canopy Dragon, 4/4 trample for 6 that can, for 2 mana, gain flying and lose trample, until end of turn. Ifbith Ifrit. Here's my boy, King Suleiman.
Is that the one that gets rid of all the Arabian Nights cards? No, that's City in a Bottle.
Is a 1/1 for a white and a colorless, tap to destroy an Ifrit or Djinn.
Oh, that's what I need in my life. Those pesky Ifrits and Djinns.
Yeah, well, He trumps that Ifbith Ifrit that's in the same pack. let's see. So we've got Thalon's Curse. It's a double green enchantment from Fallen Empires. Blue creatures do not untap as normal during their controller's untap phase. During his or her upkeep, a blue creature's controller, that's some templating, may pay an additional blue to untap that creature. And some text that doesn't fucking work anymore. Let's see. We've got Azmira, Holy Avenger. Legendary 2/3 flying for green, a white, and 2 generic. At the end of each turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Azmira, Holy Avenger, for each creature card put into your graveyard from play that turn. It's from Mirage. That's, like, not the worst card, I guess.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Yeah, we got Well of Knowledge from Weatherlight. That's an old favorite of mine. Any player may pay 2 during their draw phase to draw a card. You can play that, use that ability as many times as you choose. That's an interesting one, just rules-wise, in that it just gives this extra thing, this mana sink, to everyone. So, like, during your draw phase, yeah, just pay to draw more. It's whatever. Hmm. Oh, we've got a land. We got Lava Tubes. OP Lava Tubes, Ice Age, Depletion Land. Those things are too good, man. If we reprint those, it'll crash their value.
Seriously. Why are we getting to this agreement for a reserve list?
Yeah. Chronicles. Blame Chronicles.
The art is kind of cool on that card, though. Kind of like the art.
Yeah. Brian Wackwitz, former guest, was an awesome guest, too. He's a cool dude. Lots of good stories from the old days of Magic. Land Equilibrium. It's a 4-mana blue enchantment. If an opponent who controls at least as many lands as you do would put a land onto the battlefield, this is like a Magic Online text. That player instead puts that land onto the battlefield, then sacrifices a land. Powder Keg is a real card. And, Corrosion. 1 red-black enchantment from Visions. Cumulative upkeep 1. During your upkeep, put a rust counter on each artifact target opponent controls. If the number of rust counters on an artifact equals or exceeds its casting cost, bury the artifact. If Corrosion leaves play, remove all rust counters.
Oh, that's like a very flavorful card.
It is. That is super flavorful.
Except for the cumulative upkeep. I'm not paying that. But
yeah, it's like slowly kill artifacts very not cost effectively.
Yeah, but it's just so, it's very, and it's like red and blacks. It's very outside of blacks like wheelhouse now.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's also weird. Like that's what a card like, that's a card that should have the name Creeping Corrosion because it's super slow.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the actual Creeping Corrosion is immediate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate the name of that card.
They should flip the names, just like Corrosion should be, green card.
That one should be like Sudden Corrosion.
Yeah.
Except that it would have to have Split Second, but could be worse. I would take a Split Second Shatter Spell.
They should bring that. I like that mechanic. They should bring that back.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, that would have to be in I think, like a specialty set.
Yeah. Like an Eternal Masters. Sorry.
I think they said it's all reprints, though. It's all reprints. There's nothing new. So what do you take here? You take the Monolith? You take the...
I was thinking Monolith or, what's that, flying creature? The green-white?
Yeah, the Esmira.
Esmira.
I kind of like Dead of Loyalty.
Yeah. I mean, Esmira puts you in two colors. Grim Monolith is just going to straight-up ramp you.
Because you can stay open.
Yeah. There's also the Powder Keg. That's,
You play your 6-drop on turn 3.
if you take Grim Monolith, you know, you might be able to wheel one of the other guys. Mm. Like one of the big green guys.
Yeah, Grim Monolith into Canopy Dragon. Or Talarian Serpent.
That sick 4/4 beater.
Hey, that Talarian Serpent, that 7/7 that mills you for 7. That sounds like a draft card.
Oh man. So reserve list draft set is pretty bad, is what you're saying.
I love it, just the range of it. Yeah. Whenever anyone talks about, like, no reserve list, legacy, or no, which you're not gonna call it eternal, that's a word that fucking means something already. Eternal is a word that refers to, in this case, both legacy and vintage. Also technically refers to commander and all those, like, anything that goes back to alpha and doesn't rotate is an eternal format. So, fuck you, there's not gonna be an eternal, format called eternal. Come up with a better name.
I think the problem with that is that it already has some momentum, so they can't change it.
No, it's
because bad. That's how you know you have a really good idea is when you can't rename it.
It has not reached that point yet. Also, it's a really bad idea.
I'm not even gonna go into it. I think it's, you know what? No, I'm gonna say right now, I think it's a terrible idea. I think the idea of a neutering legacy is just like, just don't play the format. Just don't play legacy. Don't neuter it. Yeah. Don't make it like worse. You know, legacy or
don't make it shitty modern. That's what it really is.
Exactly.
It's just shitty really modern. Shitty modern.
Wait, isn't that redundant?
Well, right now. But so imagine modern today, but even shittier.
No. I don't think it could be humanly possible. Like,
yeah, just give them Ancient Tomb.
So I was talking to someone about this. Doesn't like Miracles just become the stone nuts, like Miracles and Burn, and like, who has a better draw there? Aren't those gonna be the two best decks?
I haven't bothered looking at it.
I don't think D&T gets hit by anything, does it?
No, Death and Taxes, I think, survives, almost completely intact, if not entirely intact. I think they lose, Caraxes isn't on the reserve list, right?
No.
So, yeah, I think they are 100% intact, so, yeah, D&T, but D&T might be, TNT might be slower than Miracles, though, right? Like, Miracles was like, turn one top, turn two, counterbalance, like they always do.
Yeah, but like, you got Aether Vial, and like, ways to mess with them.
That's totally true. That's totally true. See, this is why we have Celso on, because he knows about stuff.
You guys who actually know Legacy, and now that we've had this reserve list diversion, I'll get back to my goddamn deck.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's, I've mentioned it on the cast multiple times. It's, Shallow Grave Titans, which is like, kind of like less combo all-in version of Tin Fins. So like, instead of trying to get like Emrakul or Griselbrand rush into play, it's about getting, you know, Primeval Titan or Grave Titan or something like that. Ideally Primeval Titan, because then you get to six mana and can just hard cast the rest of your Titans. So sort of graveyard combo deck that also can kind of, when you play one of those games where, which you know happens in Legacy, where just both players are heavy on disruption or one is, and you just tear each other's hands apart and sit there top decking for a while. Then it plays fair things that are just dumb. So while a combo deck is trying to put pieces back together, it's like, yeah, I'll just hard cast Grave Titan.
I like that. Like, you get like that enter the battlefield, leave the battlefield triggers, because you're shallow graving your guys into play, right?
Yeah, so you get two triggers out of them.
Yeah, that's kind of sweet.
Yeah, and also, even if they get, you know, path or swords or something, you still get at least one of the triggers, so you're left with value either way.
Nice.
Also, Primeval Titan is also, like, the main way it beats Dredge. It's the Primeval Titan for that Bajuka Bog. Yeah, I played that at FNM for the second time, and again went 2-1 somehow against, like, decks with real dual lands in them. So that was fun.
Yeah, but you don't need, you know, like, the nice thing about, like, having us, I mean, how many people are at your FNM? Your Legacy FNM?
It's usually, like, right around, like, 8 to 10.
Yeah,
so like, just barely fires.
Well, I mean, the nice thing about, like, an 8-man pod or even, like, you know, 8 to 12 players, like, generally you're going to be playing similar people every week. Mm-hmm. But, like, little, like, niche decks like that, little, like, brews, like, can actually do really well when you're not playing against a room that's, like, 30% of Miracles, you know what I mean? Like, it really allows for a little bit of creativity, and that's pretty sweet that you're able to do that at your shop.
I actually beat the Miracles player that I played against.
No kidding.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Well, game one I had, like, you know, the Cabal Therapies to get the, you know, the Force of Will out of their hand.
Yep.
And was able to Shallow Grave a Primeval Titan. And that just gave me enough advantage to be able to finish them off.
Yep.
And the second game was funny. I mulled a four, but they also kept the most hilarious hand against a deck full of Cabal Therapies and discard is they kept the six land top hand on the play. So they go turn one top, and then my turn one, I like therapy them. They're like, I'm just going to reveal, like, don't even bother naming anything.
Oh,
and then
man.
When they top, I mean, they had Entreat and Terminus in their top three. So like, oh darn, I have to just draw the third card every turn, I guess. Oh well.
I mean, Miracles does want to hit their land drops on time, but
yeah. And the third game was just like hand disruption, and I eventually just hard cast Titans, even though they played a Rest in Peace. I was like, yeah, I don't care about the Rest in Peace. Played land, and that one also got to Abrupt Decay their top at end of turn when they had a second one but didn't play it, and they're like, I wanted to keep Counterspell mana up for some reason.
Eat it.
Yeah.
Eat it.
The four top
bag of shock lands.
Yeah. Yeah, the four Abrupt Decay in the board came in very handy. makes a difference. There's also a situation where, like, the only way I don't beat them on my next turn is if they top into Terminus. So.
What's your sideboard look like? You're running four Abrupt Decays?
Yep. Wow. And I've gotta change it up. It also has four Deathrite Shaman as part of the Get Fair plan.
Okay.
Deathrite is a little awkward though, because it's still that actually cares about Rest in Peace. Mm-hmm. Like, if they've got any other graveyard hate, it's good, but that's awkward. That might change, but it's good enough against the other graveyard decks.
Yep.
I don't know.
What about like, are you running like any splash of white in that deck?
I was running Sun Titans.
Okay.
For extra graveyard shenanigans, but I think that interferes with the move away from the graveyard post board plan.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to go back to being more Jund and having, like, an Inferno Titan and, like, some Thrag Tusks.
Okay. I was just going to say, if you're worried about things getting exiled, like, Pull from Eternity is a nice card from Tin Fins that could fit in that deck.
Mm. Yeah, but it still, like, it doesn't work when there's Rest in Peace.
Sure, yeah.
And I think enough people play that in the matchups that I care about, so. I'd rather just like, yep, I no longer give a shit about my graveyard. let's just take out the reanimation and the entombs, and we'll go from there. I had a bunch of mana dorks, but I think they don't work because I just want to sack them to Cabal Therapy. And, so and Jerry, who I met in Hartford this past weekend, also from your podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I think they convinced me to switch those to Veteran Explorers.
Ooh.
Because, man, I love that guy. That's one of my favorite guys of all time. Like, one of the first real decks I built, quote-unquote real, you know, the old Leash of the Hollows deck had four Veteran Explorers in it with, like, Ashnod's Altars.
Oh, I like that a lot.
That so I like bringing those in.
Hmm. So sacking that to Cabal Therapy and being able to grab two basics on top of, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Just like as just a raw ramp, basically replacing the graveyard cheating with ramping to get to the Titans faster.
Yeah, that's a cool take on like the shenanigans with what's your call? Recurring Nightmare.
Yeah, I thought about that with Sun Titan, but I don't have enough creatures in general, just because I really minimize creatures running Shallow Grave. Like, I originally had Putrid Imp, and then I was like, oh, that makes Lightning Bolton out. That's not good. Can't do that. So yeah, those got replaced with the Super Spicy Funeral Charm. Which, for those who haven't played in the Mirage days or Time Spiral block, because it got time shifted, that's the, one black instant, target creature gets +2/-1 until end of turn. So it can double as kind of early removal. Target player discards a card, or target creature gains Swamp Walk until end of turn. And those also double as, like, another thing to kill off my own Veteran Explorers if I have to.
Yep. Hmm.
Or kill, like, Goblin Guides or Young Pyromancers or Unflipped Elvers. Like, that's kind of like a, kind of a neat utility card.
Hmm. Modal cards are always great for that.
Yeah.
And a single black is a pretty good rate.
Yep.
I mean, +2/-1 kills a lot in Legacy as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because people are like, I'm not going to pay a lot for my creatures. I'm either going to pay, like, 1 or 2 mana for a small creature or a big creature in Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, you got to cheat it. Cheat it into play.
Yeah, or I'm going to cheat an enormous creature.
Have you considered running, like, just a 1 of Grizzlebrand on that deck just because he's so great?
It's so tempting, but I just, like, I want to be able to cast everything. Like,
Yeah, you can get 8 lands in the play.
Yeah, and it's definitely happened, but also, like, one of the match I lost was against Death and Taxes when I just got ported out in game 3.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, I can't actually get to 6 mana. God damn it. Even to cast a creature. So.
Yeah.
It does go up to 7 for 1 mere Battlesphere. Cause that's an honorary Titan. that hits for 12 off a Shallow Grave.
Freaking against Leona deck.
Yeah. Yeah, hits for 12 off a Shallow Grave and leaves you 4/1/1s. That's not bad. But yeah, I think, figuring some stuff out there. I think I might also use Basalt Monoliths. I was giving that card a long, hard look. Just to make sure I get from 3 to 6. That's all I really need for my ramp. I just need to go from 3 to 6 and then I'm good. Also, I think if I'm going to spend a lot of mana, I was looking at Orcish Settlers. Like, that seems like a hilarious thing to do after, like, a couple Primeval Titan triggers. I don't know. That spicy probably doesn't make it. Maybe one of, who knows. But that's my legacy deck. I did mention I was in Hartford last weekend, which was, by the time this goes up, is some weekends ago. Me and my wife went down ostensibly for a Nightwish concert, which was awesome. I wasn't the hugest fan of them, but, I just didn't really know them very well. Like, I'm like, yeah, they're the, you know, Finnish symphonic metal band. That's cool. They're pretty incredible. So, yeah.
Nice. Just a really good live show.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're very easy to rock the fuck out to. That's my review.
That means they put on a good live show, man. For
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. One of the opening bands was good. The other one was like a shitty Bon Jovi that only had a triple bass pedal that was stuck, like, and that's like the only way they could hit the bass drum. That was kind of miserable. But
wait, shitty Bon Jovi, isn't that a little bit repetitive?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like Bon Jovi to begin with. I understand people who do. I think even people who like Bon Jovi would probably have gotten pissed off at the machine gun on the bass drum. So.
Hey man, Bon Jovi's from New Jersey. I got nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
It didn't fit, but whatever. Like, I mean, I could tell they were kind of pulling off that genre well, but, you know, 80s hair metal, you know, or hair rock, jock rock, cock rock, whatever, didn't fucking fit.
Yeah.
It wasn't right. They were there because they're also Finnish, I think. Like, that's the deal. So, meh. But yeah, we did that. We also met up with Celso for lunch. That's part of why he's on the cast now. So we went to Black Bamboo.
Yeah.
Chinese food.
That was a good place. Good choice.
Yeah, they also, I have to do this research because my wife has celiacs. They have a great, selection of gluten-free options.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah. So that's cool. And it was all, like, it's primarily a takeout place, but they got a few tables, so, and wasn't full, so we didn't mind hanging out there for like two and a half hours.
It's like a slightly more modernized takeout delivery Chinese place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I wouldn't be surprised to see that food in a restaurant with, like, proper tables and stuff. But, you know, it's probably just, like, a cost of space thing to operate that way.
Yeah.
Like, your return on investment, too, when you're doing, like, an actual, like, dine-in experience is just, I feel like it just doesn't fit that business model for Chinese food, you know? Like, that stuff is meant to go out in paper boxes with little tiny metal handles.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a restaurant near us that I'm always worried because whenever I go in there, there's, like, maybe at most one or two tables seated, but like, I think they just do primarily take out. I think that's how they stay in business.
So did you get to play up in Connecticut at all? Or did you play any side events or?
I didn't get to play anything, cause we wanted to get out of there fairly early on Sunday, like afternoon, but ready to head over to Tabletop Games to check out the, you know, just what was going on. Legacy is not dead. They had 98 players.
Nice.
For a Legacy event. And like I said, met your co-host, talked some of the stuff, some of this very same stuff with him and Celso. And
do you hear that? He came down from Maine. Maine.
So here's, let me tell you what happened.
Yeah. So I was someone wasn't there.
Yeah, I know. I'm that asshole. Well, what happened was I was supposed to edit our cast. I do the editing for the Living a Legacy podcast. And, so I was supposed to do it on Friday night. And the one that Jerry sent me had only his audio. So, like, I know Jerry's a big fan of himself, but, like, you know, just the one-person podcast doesn't always work, especially when he's replying to us. So I had to wait for Adrian to send me, because luckily we had a second person running Skype recorder. I had to wait for Adrian to send me his audio. And I got that late Friday night, was after, like, I was, you know, going to bed or whatever. Saturday I had to work like in the afternoon, so I didn't really want to do it during the day. And by the time I got home at like 9 o'clock, I'm like, I really don't want to edit this podcast because I'm going to be up for 2 or 3 hours. And like, then I'm supposed to go to this event tomorrow. And then when I got up the next day, I'm like, look, I got to edit this podcast. Like, there's no way I have to leave my house at like 8:30. There's no way I'm going to be able to do this event, come back at like 7, 8 o'clock and like edit again to be up at 5 the next morning to go to the gym. So I'm just like, I just got to bite the bullet. I took my kid out to see Star Wars again one last time before it leaves theaters, my 4-year-old. And then I came home, edited the cast, made dinner for the family, and then had an early turn in for the night. So I missed the event, which is kind of a bummer. I was really looking forward to it, but the nice thing about living in this area is that I can play Legacy pretty much. Like, I'll probably go do Legacy F&M this Friday because I won't be able to make it to our local store on Sunday. So there's plenty of events here, but I was just looking forward to seeing a lot of you guys up there. I was bummed I missed it, but such is life.
You took your son out to go see Deadpool. That would be interesting.
You want to know though? Like, I did, my wife's idea for Valentine's Day was to go see Deadpool. So that just shows you I married up for sure. And, it was very good. For people who haven't seen it, I really enjoyed the movie. It was what I expected it to be. It was good.
Nice. Yeah, that's absolutely the correct decision, is to go see Star Wars with your kid. Like, that's, I can't think of many things to do other than that are better.
Yeah, it was good. It was definitely not like a wasted day. So there are always more events, but like, I have two kids and they will always come first before anything I want to do for myself. So,
I can also totally relate to the struggles of how much time it takes to edit.
Yes. Yep. Friggin' Jerry, man. It was Jerry's fault.
Yeah, when in doubt, blame the guy who's not here. That's what we did with you when we were there, and now we can do that with Jerry here.
Well, Jerry's the only one who has hashtag Jerrygate named after him, so, like, you know. He's like...
This is true. Well, and Adrian is just an old man. Very, yeah. Very old man.
Yeah, I kind of get that impression listening to Leaving.
Adrian is certainly the most senior of the gentlemen on our podcast.
Yeah. So the most heavily Massachusetts accented.
Like, oh, yeah.
I'm just waiting for, like, Adrian to pull a story either about a story about him tuna fishing out in the deep sea, or B, a Tallbooth Willie story, like one of the two.
Like a Whitey Bulger fucking story, like.
Exactly.
It is great. I mean, that guy is a wealth of knowledge of Legacy, though. It always amazes me, like. He knows so many, like, just like sweet little cards, and I don't have the breadth and depth of knowledge that Adrian does, so he's a good resource for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things I enjoy about Legacy is digging up old cards. Like, I'm kind of disappointed I didn't think of Veteran Explorer, to be honest, like, because that's, like I said, that's my guy. but I do appreciate getting to.
I mean, there's literally like 15,000 cards. Like, it's not surprising that you forget one or two, like, sweet interactions. You know, that's what. Legacy is such a fun format in that, like, it can take a long time to properly tune a deck, because I can't think of a single person out there who, like, has such a great grasp of the card pool that they can just knock a deck out of the park from day one. You know, like, it's hard. It's very, very difficult to do that.
Yeah, I also didn't play because I haven't been back playing Legacy very long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had gotten out several years ago when I sold my forces. And I was like, you know what? I don't play Legacy. Doesn't happen enough. Like, you know, one of the local stores runs like a casual one on Saturdays or whatever. But like, that's only something that I do when I like O2 drop out of a GPT or something or some other event, because they run at like 1 o'clock. So if I go for like a morning event and scrub out, that's when I go casual. Which is honestly is good timing. And but like, I was like, I'm gonna get rid of these. I'm not gonna get blue duels ever. I'm gonna just, you know, gonna play bad Legacy decks, and kind of still am.
There's some good Legacy decks that don't run a lot of blue.
That's true.
I'm sure you can find them out there.
Yeah. I mean, when I did that, it was definitely the time when, like, I could joke that, you know, a bad Legacy deck was a Legacy deck without Force of Will.
Yeah.
And, yeah, for a while I ran, like, a Cascade Hypergenesis deck, which was just fun.
Wasn't Jerry T? I think that the first time I saw that deck, like, Jerry T was running it. This was like a few years ago in like an SCG event. It looked sweet.
Yeah, I built it with some of the Chancellors from New Phyrexia.
Okay.
Because like the calculation is, well, they're worse the more turns in the game there are. So I want to have them. You know, you want to be having them in your opening hand as much as possible. And one of the difficulties with, like, a Hypergenesis type deck is you need just critical mass of beef in your hand to put into play. And they kind of solve both. So, like, you're not doing very much past the first couple turns. And then you've got all this beef. So, like, sometimes, like, you would have, like, a fair Hypergenesis where it just puts, like, you know, a pair of Chancellor of the Tangle into play on turn one. And it's like, yeah, it's just a couple 5/7 Vigilance Reach. Like,
seems good.
Have fun with that on turn one or two. It also has this fun aspect of, it's just, you just play showdown. Like, put your hand down and see who wins. Like, who's got the better set of cards? Like, I definitely have lost games with it to, like, goblins when they had, like, you know, a Krenko and some war chiefs or something. I was like, whoops. Got wrecked by that one. they kept the one lander. And yeah, I think I'm retiring that deck now that I've got more of a real Legacy deck. And also, it was a budget deck before a bunch of it fucking spiked. Yeah, Legacy's fun. But basically, the reason I got back into it is Puka Trade. Is like, it made it possible.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know what, I can ship enough just random crap and put together, you know, the playset of Entombs and get the Shallow Graves and the Corpse Dances and, you know, all the Titans and stuff, and I just slowly put it together. I'd gotten the Cabal Therapies for Ron Spencer Vintage Artists Constructed.
Mm-hmm.
So I had those. I still had my Thoughtseizes. I'm like, well, that's like... That's
yeah, I mean, that's how I built my entire Legacy. Well, I should say, like, when I first got into Legacy was last May. There was an SCG Open coming, and I wanted to play in it, so I built Burn just to try the format out. And I got all my burn through Poker Trade. And then, cause I started playing back, in right around when Tempest released, Tempest Block.
Yep.
That's when I started playing. And so I had a good amount of old cards and I was playing standard, you know, from like Born of the Gods release. I started back with Magic and I was playing standard for a while. And so I had a good standard collection. And, Puka Trade got me out of like a lot of old cards that, you know, didn't really mean anything to me and I wasn't going to use. They were probably just a lot of commander cards and like I had a lot of like, just like, you know, sets of whatever, built. And probably 70% of that is all through Puka Trade. It's been, if you want to get into the format and you have cards sitting around that you're not doing anything with, like, Puka Trading is an amazing way to get full value for your cards. You know what I mean? Like, you're not selling to a buy list. You know, and the great thing about Puka Trade is that, like, for instance, when I was a kid, for some reason, I really bought a ton of Plane Shift packs. I don't know why. I never actually played with the cards. I just, like, threw them in a binder. So I had all these Plane Shift cards in a binder, and like, so I've been shipping them out, like, literally in packs of 20 to 30 to, like, collectors who want just to collect the set. And so I got, like, all these crappy commons, uncommons, bulk rares, full value for them. So, like, they add up, you know, you're not just shipping cards off, you know, for $1,000 for $3 to a vendor. You know, you're getting a lot more for them if you want to spend the time and actually, like, take the time and list your cards and mail them out, and It's work, but you get a lot of return for it, for sure.
Yeah. I find, like, the real edge is, like, just throwing in those two or three, like, 15 to 30 cent cards with, like, another card.
Yep.
Like, just finding someone who's got just, like, a couple of weird random things on their list.
Yep, 100%. When we actually had, Eric Freytag from, who's the founder of Puka Trade on our podcast, sometime last year. And, that's what I told him. I was like, honestly, like, if you really put the work in and list all your cards, you will find, like, these really weird random matches where, like, you'll send them, like, a $1.50 rare. So that's, like, you know, basically worth the postage because your postage in your envelope, say, is going to run you, like, 50, 60 cents. Yeah. But if you can throw in, like you said, a couple commons and uncommons that are, like, 10, 15 cents a piece, all of a sudden that's paying for your postage. You know what I mean? And it's much better that way. And in all honesty, like, the spirit of Puka Trade is pretty sweet, too. So if you're, it kind of hits on all sides there, you know, like, it's not like you have to find someone who wants all your shitty stuff to trade you a Force of Will. You can just trade all your stuff away and find someone who wants to get rid of a Force of Will. You know, it's like, it doesn't have that same difficulty of trading in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The toughest thing in real life is finding a match. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you pull cards from each other's binders, end up like $2 or $3 off or something. And like, just can't find that extra.
Or what's worse is like you flip through their binder, you know, or find a card that you want, they flip through yours and like, I don't want any of this stuff. So it's like, you just wasted your time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why are we even doing this? Or like you get the guy, and this is typically me, like I have a binder in my bag and people ask me to see my binder. I'm like, oh, those are actually just sideboard cards. None of those aren't for trade.
Yeah.
I keep them sleeved in a binder.
So
like, I just want them with me. I travel with like, you know, a lot of my legacy cards with me so I can make last minute changes to my sideboard if I want to. Yeah, man, if people haven't checked out Puka Trade, it is well worth the effort for sure.
Yeah, one of the toughest things for me with my binder is that I ship so much of it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most of my binder is, like, low-value standard stuff that just no one wants. Mm-hmm. Or standard stuff that other people ship faster than I can.
Yeah.
And, like, played old stuff and foreign stuff. So things that I just can't ship on Puka Trade.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've actually been selling some of my, like, more played legacy cards to pay for, airfare to GP Minneapolis.
Oh, nice.
And I got fully on board that hype train a few weeks ago. I'm probably gonna be staying with, Hobbs, also a former guest, who's pretty awesome.
Nice. What format is Minneapolis?
I have no idea.
Oh.
for me, the format is Vintage Artists Constructed. Gotcha. Cause Mike Linneman is putting on a Vintage Artist event, and that's gonna have, I don't care, I just don't want to play that fucking format.
Mm-hmm. So what's the draw to that format? Can you explain it to me? Like, I get people like to play like these weirdly restrictive formats. Do you have to really be into art to enjoy that format? Because art to me is like, it's alright. That doesn't really, you know, doesn't really get me that much.
It's an intersection of the two. Like, it's definitely the challenge of the extreme design restrictions. Mm-hmm. I love formats where weird cards that would never get play otherwise get played. Oh, just like weird stuff like the, like Josh has a Mark Tadine deck. Uh-huh. And, you know, obviously it's got like mana drains and Sol Ring and Mana Vault and stuff. But like for creatures, you know, Tadine doesn't have many new creatures. He's got like old school creatures. So it's gonna have like, you know, its main creatures are like Wistful Selkie. and like some other stuff like that.
So like even the basics have to have the same artist. Like every card in that deck has to have the same artist.
Yeah.
And there's 60 card decks.
Mm-hmm. Damn, my internet's shitty tonight.
So what I was saying was, like, when you see, like, the new set, like, the new Conspiracy set or Eternal Masters coming out, you guys must be, like, just chomping at the bit to see what cards get new art, right?
Yeah, Eternal Masters in particular. Especially because, like, Therese Nielsen's one of the stronger options for Vintage Artists Constructed. She did art way back in the day, too.
Right.
But also, she's gotten some new art on reprints. Like Swords and Mother of Runes.
Mm-hmm.
So like getting a newer art, like a lot of newer artists have, you know, a whole bunch of lands and stuff, or, you know, a bunch of like good new creatures, but don't have like old spells. So when they get like a reprint of an old spell, their deck becomes like super powerful.
Is there any deck that's kind of like come out as being like a front runner, like the best deck or like a top tier deck in that format? Or is it still like, is it still like very much in its infancy at the same time?
Yeah, there's plenty of room for exploration, and it is a format that grows and changes with every new set release. But Greg Staples is the easy front runner. He won the event they did in Vegas and the one we did at Eternal Weekend, mainly on the back of Baneslayer Angel, but also just because it's got just good cards up and down the curve, like Blade Splicer. You know, it's got like a little bit of burns, removal, Parallax Wave is a real card.
Hmm.
Good all around.
Very interesting. That's pretty cool. That's like one of those fan made formats.
Hmm. I consider myself just an authority on weird, non existent, made up formats. So I think I have the authority to say no reserveless legacy is a shitty idea.
There are some people who love the idea, man. Like,
yeah.
There are some people who think it's like the best thing. Seems like a lot of people who don't play Legacy think it's a great idea, you know? and I understand, like, you know, a lot of people are, like, heavily invested in the format. To me, like, you know, I've invested in the last, you know, year or so, but if they reprinted the cards in the reserve list, I wouldn't care because people could play the format. I would be able to play more decks. Like, I'd be able to play different decks, and that's like a win-win to me. I really don't give a shit about the value of my cards. I just want to play, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think honestly, if Magic needs another format, it's something between Standard and Modern, not something between Modern and Legacy.
Hmm.
Because there's too much of a gap from my cards are rotating out of Standard to I'm gonna go play Modern. Like, the reason Modern and Old Extended and existed was to give a home to cards that were good in Standard, but are never gonna make it in Legacy. And right now, Modern has too much overlap between Modern staples and Legacy staples,
mm-hmm.
and it's too hard for a Standard quality card to crack Modern, despite what the Eldrazi are doing right now. Like, outside of nonsense like that, where, oh, these things are just busted with Eldrazi Temple and Ugin.
Yeah, I mean, Fast Mana is just wrecking that format, right?
Yeah,
like, without any good, like, land destruction, which I know they're not big on anymore, mm-hmm. It's very difficult to combat that deck, so.
Like, if I was going to craft a new Magic format for, like, competitive constructed play, I think I would essentially do the Planeswalker era and start with Lorwyn Forward.
Hmm.
Because that cuts out a lot of the most stupid cards that are ruining Modern, like Mirrodin Block and 8th and 9th Edition. Like, those just cause so many problem children running around. Like, start there and ban from there. And that, it cleans up a lot of the messes. That also cuts out Storm entirely and a lot of the just more broken combo stuff. So, I think you could maybe even, you know, like if you keep Jason Stoneforge Band, you could maybe have Ponder and Preordain in a world without the same kind of combos. So, at least one of them. Like, you could have it would be more interesting. And also just a world that's built for Planeswalkers.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. Like, before Planeswalkers, they made other, like, stupid powerful spells. They just were instants and sorceries for the most part.
Right.
Or artifacts. So. Mm. Planeswalkers are powerful, but inherently more interactive. I think that Lorwyn marked a pretty major shift in design philosophy with them. Mm-hmm. Well, I think before my internet shits the bed again, we should just get a couple things, a couple housekeeping things dealt with that we need to talk about and wrap up. Just recently, there was a GoFundMe on Twitter, and I know Jack wants to rant about this and did on Twitter a bit. He's not here. So Big Head Joe of like YoMTG Taps, which had fairly recently returned from a hiatus, put up like a GoFundMe to quit playing Magic, which is weird.
Yeah.
I think it's backwards.
Yeah, to say the least, it's very unusual.
It's like the reverse GoFundMe, because it's like, I need money to stop podcasting and leave the community, not to continue making content and being part of the community. So, and like, I'd kind of cooled on my opinion of him of late, but not enough to like be like, yep, I'll pay money for him to get the fuck out. Like, it's not that bad. Like, there's definitely people I would, you know, chip in $5 if it meant they never played Magic. Those people exist. But, he's not quite one of them. I don't want to bring that up partly to bring light to, if you're gonna spend some money on a GoFundMe, there's way better things, cause like, it's supposed to be like, kinda charitable and stuff. There's a Christopher Rush Memorial Fund and a Wayne England Memorial Fund, sort of support their memorials and their families, after their sudden loss of them. Which, if I had to choose one, I'd say go to the Wayne England, cause it's not nearly as funded. Chris Rush impacted every aspect of Magic. I'm not gonna go into too much detail. I'm just gonna say go listen to Mark Rosewater's Drive to Work podcast about it, and bring a box of tissues, cause he cries at the end. And you might too. I was tearing up myself. It's super weird to hear someone as like, kind of gregarious as Mark Rosewater is, getting that just genuinely emotional and sad about something. So it's really striking.
I haven't listened to that episode. I actually stopped listening to Drive to Work a while ago because I made a commitment to listen to, if I was going to listen to podcasts, it was going to be ones that made me better at the game. So I listened to more competitive spiky stuff, but that's probably one that I'll go back to and listen, because it's obviously worth the listen. I've heard a lot of people comment on it, so.
Yeah, I don't listen to all of them. Like, I don't usually listen to the, like, you know, 4 to 6 part, like, set recaps or whatever, mm-hmm. but, like, a lot of the design insights are actually really useful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hearing him talk about design philosophy, like, is sort of, you can actually get kind of a lead on, or a feel for what you're gonna see, coming up in Magic. Like, over the summer, I was like, you know, when there was no lightning strike equivalent in Origins, I'm like, we're not going to have a 2-mana 3-damage spell in battle. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not going to just get lightning strike back again. And people were like, nah, what, you know, we'll get something, you know, and we didn't really. And you know, so there was other stuff that, you know, and that sort of thing can, you know, the replacements were Wild Slash and Fiery Impulse, but those cards play very differently from just having lightning strike. And, you know, early on in the format, at least, because Lightning Strike and Bio Blight were gone, Mantis Rider was a pretty big player in the format, before people adjusted. So you can actually get a competitive leg up if you understand how design is working and, you know, what they will and won't do. At least in terms of those sort of bread and butter spells. They'll still do weird things that Rare and Mythic that you can never guess, but.
Yeah. It's, I've definitely listened to some of those, and they are interesting for sure.
Also, I just love stories about the old days of Magic. I really do.
Oh, like his 20 years and his 20 years and 20 podcasts or whatever is really interesting. I totally agree.
Yeah, there were some good old Magic stories in the Melissa de Tora episodes too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, like, you know, the early trades and stuff, like trading a you know, beta balance for like a dozen cards, including like multiple pieces of power, shit like that. All kinds of good stuff. So yeah, I recommend that. Wayne England and Christopher Rush will be missed. I'm really glad I did get him to sign my playmat and do a sketch on my playmat. I didn't get as much as I would have liked signed, but, you know, I got that. I did get to meet him. I got to hear a great story about him,
jokingly threatening to draw a big old dick on someone's Black Lotus, which was fantastic. That was from, you know, his agent, you know, telling stories like that.
Yeah.
Jeff Ferrara when Chris was drawing stuff and busy. So that was cool. It's going to be a loss also just to have him around. Like, he was full of good stories too. And I did not meet Wayne in England. He was originally supposed to be at Eternal Weekend, but he got sick. Didn't make it. He was represented by Mark Aronowitz, who, if you've been paying attention to artists, particularly on the East Coast, like, he's agent for, like, a whole bunch of guys, and has done great work in getting them just viable, as, like, business people, so, you know, able to make more of a living off of their, you know, historic artwork, and, you know, go to events, getting them out to events, you know, like, really up until a few years ago, Chris Rush didn't go out to events, and, you know, it was really his close friend and agent who got him back out on the scene.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him at GP, well, the GP that was in Worcester, I think it might have been called GP Boston, for whatever fucking reason they decided, but I did,
yeah, that's where, like, I saw him too.
So. Yeah, I didn't get to, like, a chance to talk to him, but, like, I walked by his table and, you know, just kind of gave him a nod, he said hi, and, yeah, it's a bummer, man. I remember, actually, we were recording a few weeks ago when the news broke on Twitter, and I just, like, stopped, like, in the middle of what we were talking about, like, oh man, like, Christopher Rush died. It was really surprising. Obviously, like, took a lot of people by surprise, and it was definitely a bummer. You know, it's crazy that the game has gotten to the age where we will inevitably lose people that are extremely important to it. You know, that have played an integral role in its infancy, and have been, you know, just kind of like the cornerstones of what some, you know, for someone like you who you're so into a format like Vintage Artist Constructed, and
yeah.
Like, that's something that you very much pay attention to. There are guys like, Original MTG Art on Twitter, like, who does, like, a lot of stuff with artists. And, I mean, that's, you know, I feel like the sentiment towards art has changed a lot since I started the game. At least from my perspective. So, you know, it sucks. It's unfortunate. Yeah. But, I mean, the retrospect, kind of like the silver lining, is that, like, the guy did something with the talent that he has and affected, like, really had, like, an impact in people's lives, a positive impact in the game that we all love to play, and made some really iconic, unbelievable art for the game, so.
Chris Rush also, he and Jesper Murfers did the mana symbols. Mm-hmm. They put those together. So, you see Chris's art every day.
Yep.
I guess, unless you're playing colorless Eldrazi like a goddamn heathen, you see Chris Rush's fucking mana symbol.
Fucking scumbags. Who does that?
Come on, at least play like blue, red, play like colored Eldrazi.
So my colorless mana came pain in a gray circle and had a regular number attached to it. Wasn't any of this diamond shit.
Yeah. And also, full art lands was Chris Rush's idea.
Really?
Yeah. And he had pitched, the story goes that he had pitched that idea several times to Wizards, and they were like, "Yeah, no, we don't, we got this card frame thing, that's what our thing that we do." Oh. And he told Mark Rosewater about it on, like, you know, they were sitting next to each other on a plane, and then when Mark was going to do Unglued, he wanted to put something kind of weird and different and special in there. I was like, "Oh, you know, this is out there enough that we could get away with the full art lands." And, of course, everyone loved it.
I mean, when I think about it, the best full art lands, I mean, are the John Avon lands, I think they are, from Unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of the reason why they're the best lands is because they have the least amount of border.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's, I mean, the art is amazing, right? Mm-hmm. To start with, but I think they're so attractive because they have the least amount of border to them. Like, I would love to see lands that the art goes all the way to the edge, with the exception of, like, maybe that black border that goes around the card, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I would love that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, like, Unglued, though, is kind of cool, because it's got land art by some artists that didn't do a lot of lands. Like, what is it, Mark Zug? That's his swamp, and that is the only basic he's ever done. So, stuff like that is kind of cool. Therese obviously has done some fantastic lands, but most of them were Gru and Judge
promos. I was going to say that, aren't they all, like, you want to talk about pricey dual lands.
Jeez. Yeah.
Like, he has some Gru lands.
Yeah, I would kind of like, yeah, no reserve list Legacy, but yeah, we're going to play with with $200 land, basics. That's the way you do it. One sort of note I'd like to end on, but that's a little more positive, is there was the whole, the day Eternal Masters was announced, there was the whole vendor leaks thing going on. And also just a lot of, like, debate and uproar about, like, you know, the health of Legacy as a format and what it meant and, like, what about the reserve list and stuff. And David Leavitt tweeted something at the vendor leaks. And they responded something like, you know, it's funny, you can go fuck yourself, Hot Pocket.
Yeah. Oh, David Leavitt is just like a boil on the ass of everything that is terrible about Magic.
Yeah.
And he's the fucking worst. He's like the stone nuts, just worse.
It's just like, just this mold that's just growing in the community. And it's like, oh, I gotta scrub this off again.
He's just like, I mean, the guy streams like Duels of the Planeswalkers for 11 people on Twitch. Like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah.
Get out of here. Like,
I saw like someone like retweet him. I was like, why are you fucking retweeting that guy? And I was just doing it just to say, like, the guy produces nothing of value.
No.
Like, it's just
he's a clickbait guy, right? Like, anything he writes is made for clickbait sites. And
yeah, and like he'd written a quote unquote article about Eternal Masters that was just regurgitating the release information that Wizards put out. There's like nothing else. That's not content.
No, I've never seen him add anything of value other than entertainment value of people just taking huge dumps on him.
Yeah, but then the thing is, like, I said that, and I think it was like the Masters of Modern podcast or one of the modern podcasts. And they're like, we don't know this guy, whatever. Like, they somehow hadn't encountered him yet. And, but they're just like, everyone else dogpiled on. Like, no, I guess human garbage. He's a piece of shit. I'm like, okay.
Oh, when he ever insinuated that, I think this was last summer, that anyone who created content for free was a slave or something
he went after bro deals because he was pissed at Jeebus, understandable. But...
Well, I mean, so that, which was fine, but like all Jeebus said was like, yeah, he's like, Leavitt is basically a spam bot, which
yeah,
he is
indistinguishable from a bot. Yeah,
like, which he is. Like, he has followed and unfollowed me so many times, I had to block him on Twitter.
Yeah.
So tired of it. Oh man.
Yeah, I never bothered blocking him. I just muted him. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, same difference.
I don't actually give a shit if he sees me talking shit.
Yeah, it's actually a little bit more satisfactory to like let him know that you're like just talking shit about him.
Yeah.
Because I'll tag him in something that like I want to talk about him because I just can't stand the guy.
But yeah, in the middle of all that, just like drama, getting this just piece of gold, this just gold nugget of just go fuck yourself, Hot Pocket. It was just so the fucking tweet of the night. It's the front runner for tweet of the year.
Oh yeah,
to be honest, so like
it's so good. Oh man.
And like normally I might feel mean about something like that, but I've heard some other stories that he's worse than just useless. So
I don't feel mean.
Like, okay, yeah, no remorse. Okay.
He's a grown adult. He's a grown adult. I'm a grown adult. Like, we can be assholes to each other. That's part of life.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. Cool.
Oh. Man, like, Skype has said Silsa was on this call for a while, but I think he got lost at some point. So.
Really?
I haven't heard from anywhere else.
The poor bear.
So yeah, the bear has gone back to the woods. at Balduvian Bears, a good night. A good winter, whatever. I think he was just up too long, you know, for this time of year. Let's wrap up. Pat, give your contact info.
Yeah, sure. You can find me on Twitter at Pat Uglow. You can catch me on the Leaving a Legacy podcast. We are on the MTG Cast Network. We release pretty much every single Monday. You can catch us on there. Also, we have a really great Facebook group. You can search for Leaving a Legacy on Facebook. Everyone's welcome there. The only thing we ask is that you're not a dickhead. We talk about Legacy there. Really, we have like, you know, a great amount of fans of the podcast, friends of ours, just talking about Legacy, man. It's great. If you want to get into the format, we do deck techs every week and, you know, nothing's off limits. Nothing's too small to talk about for us. So hit us up on Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, I'm at Lil Guppy. The cast is at Not Another MTG, though the cast account is pretty dormant. It mostly just posts updates and occasionally retweet a thing or share a thing. Or just complain about having to edit, because that's cool. And totally valuable.
I feel you, man. I feel you.
Hashtag content. I also recently started a fantasy baseball website called weirdfantasyformats.com that occasionally puts up some content. We're focusing on non-standard formats with weird categories and weird rules and odd roster construction. So, unsurprisingly, the same way I love Magic, I love fantasy baseball. So that mostly because I did like a 5,000 word write-up of my 20 team dynasty league I joined last year. And didn't really have anywhere to put it. So one of the other guys is like, would you want to start like a league blog or something? I'm like, that sounds fucking useless. Let's just start a website. Alright. It can technically have more scope than that, but yeah, we get some stuff up there, like reviewing the different platforms and talking about different leagues. I've started some bad categories leagues with just all the worst baseball categories that are available. I think my favorite that I've run across is CBS offers RBI minus home runs. That's it's like, let's take anything in the player's control out of the equation. This is just the contextual stuff.
Like, yeah, what is the value in that statistic?
Yeah, yeah. Besides useless stuff that just doesn't happen often enough, like cycles and, you know, complete game shutouts, or there's like a shutout losses. It's like, oh yeah, I'm rooting for that. Though I still don't know if that's a positive or negative stat. I don't know if it's better to have fewer of those or more of those. Like, those are the best stats too. It's like, yeah. This is so bad, we don't know if it's good or bad.
What does this mean? I don't know.
Yeah, God. Fucking relief wins. Yeah, that's fucking trash. Let's take wins and also take out any response, like, any actual player inputs. Entirely contextual.
The thing that I love about fantasy sports is that it comes from such a nerd background, like literally a nerd background, and now it's like everyone and their mom literally will play fantasy sports.
Yeah.
Just because they don't have to do the math anymore, you know?
I've done a few sports takeover episodes when Jack needed a week off, and all these people that I've brought in from like these, you know, fantasy baseball leagues, or like there was a hockey one. Every single person has played Magic at some point in their lives.
You know what? The intersection of like people with weird hobbies, like Magic has. I was always surprised I even came back to the game. I had no intention of it. Like, I played when I was in middle school. I played through high school. When I went to college, I stopped, and I didn't play for like 10, 11 years, and then randomly.
If you were in middle and high school in the mid 90s, you probably picked up Magic for at least, you know, a month or two.
Yeah, or at least you were exposed, like you saw people playing it, you understood that it was a game. It was a thing, you know?
Yeah, also to reference the Drive to Work, I love Melissa Torres' story that, like, when she was a kid, like, you know, around, like, Alpha, her dad was like, or uncle or someone was like, hey, would you be interested in this Magic? And she was like, nah, it's some game for nerds.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to do that.
I don't want to play a fucking nerd game.
Yeah. So it was later that she got into Magic, even though, like, there was that opportunity to get in it at the ground floor. Nope. Later.
No thanks in that nerd game.
Yeah. My favorite story like that, though, was another one of these fantasy baseball guys, Mauricio Rubio, who he was, like, the jock who started playing Magic to beat up the nerds at their own game. I thought that was kind of awesome.
I mean, like, I played football all through high school. I played football in college. Like, it's the intersection of people interested in the game is just so much wider, I think, than some gave it credit for early on, you know?
Yeah, and I think even then, like, then Wizards as a company anticipated or understood.
Mm-hmm.
So, peace out, nerd games. Go play your nerd games. And that's what I'm going to do, is play some nerd games.
Hell yeah.
And thanks as always to Professor Elemental for letting us use his wonderful music for our intros, outros, and incidentals, which I'll probably need to use with all the times of call drop this tonight. Probably heard a bunch already. Well, good night, everyone. Space of cards.
And pauses. The buildings held in position by different forces. The houses whisper the stories of the people in them. I'm willing to whisper with them. Living the lost hour. Metal shutters covered the shops now. The call to consumption finally locked out. The sober folk are back in their boxes. So aside from the staggering drunk who grabs at his monsters, it's just me and some badgers and foxes who vanish in the shadows fast as the clocks tick. Take it. Take in the air cause it's yours. There's no traffic to steal it. No police with their various laws to say which direction you can't walk in. Walk to the cemetery, catch a scarlet morning, fling its first fingers of colour from the coming sun. The fingers by which the dark will be undone. The sun suddenly comes struggling free from the horizon. A rumble of life hums in the stomach of Brighton. And each nugget of light brings the wonder inviting me to come and imbibe it. I'm happy where I sit and nothing is like this.
This graveyard is my garden. A place to come where I can take the stars in.
This graveyard is my garden. Place to calm where I can take the stars.
I've been visiting the cemetery regularly since I was 23. My friends and me, we leap the fence and weave through an annex of trees where granite effigies nestle in nether leaves. Asleep at Gethsemane, we're descending deep to the church by the waterfall, the terminal where the horse pulled coffins hold.
John, we're gonna tour the memorials.
You know, I'll just coach, it's cool. I got some thoughts to scroll. I'm on a stroll until I found a good nook in the woods. I put down my rucksack and then I took off my hood. A ladybird is pushing it to get a look at my book. I blew her back in the bush so that she wouldn't get squished. I lean against gray bark in a great graveyard, fading in a star until the glade is dark. Yeah. Look around you with the fading grass. We age and break apart. Are you frightened? I am. But then inside, when it's silent, I find a piece of diamond lightning. I don't even like to describe. It's just kind of a wild quiet right in behind our eyelids, reminding me the epiphany my mate once came with. Energy never dies, it just changes state, which is why this location is sacred and why I feel paved with graves is my favorite place. This graveyard is my garden, a place to come where I can take the stars in.
This graveyard is my garden, place to come where I can take the stars in.
I didn't want to come here in the first place. First taste of fear, this is clearly the worst place. I could be nearly in bed, eyes heavy and rested. Instead, it's adventures for those interested in opposing a regular entry. Instead, we climb over the fence to find friends sedentary and enter an accentuated garden of secrets, punctuated by the restless feathers of the sleepless. The three of us sneaking into an obelisk, creeping sheepishly through the sleepiest necropolis. Midnight possibilities, black is white, and for a second every resident comes back back to life, in essence reminding us that time is limited. So in the time left, every breath that's given is an incredible inevitability. Acknowledging death gives a shred of humility, left with an illegible entry, an etched footnote, stone platitudes, the next good quote. I find inspiration in the night air and the company, find life in a graveyard, each sight is somebody, and I'm sure they're glad of the company too, that these three gents found something to do, where the residents sleep and the memories seep into B-movie scenery and unmeasured peace.
I finally completed my 99 bottles of salmon.
I actually, I was going through Twitter while we were on one of our little, like, breaks in,
yeah, our shitty internet breaks.
And I saw that I was going to bring it up, but I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the cast. I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah, I started that back in, like, 98 or something. I was, like, you know, playing just these multiplayer games in the days before EDH. I'm like, I want to get 99 bottles of salmon. And play 99 bottles of Sulam on the wall.
That's so funny.
And just figure out cards to, like, exchange control with them. So, like, it kind of got reinvigorated when I saw, like, is the one that just triggers whenever a permanent enters the battlefield. It gets swapped. So, yeah, just play with some of those, like Puka's Mischief or something. And it's like, there's just, like, you get to your four mana, and every turn you take one down, and then you pass it around.
That's great.
But like with Commander, there's no format for that anymore.
No.
There kind of isn't. Like, there's no format for to play a, you know, 150 card deck with 99 bottles of soup.
Oh man. That's great.
I'll just have to, I don't know.
Just make a binder, just like someone asks, you know what you should do is just like fill a trade binder with it.
Yeah.
And someone's like, oh, can I see your binder? Just hand them it. It's just like page after page after page of the same card.
99 miles of sooner, 99 miles of sooner.
But nobody has cards. I mean, how can you play Terramoo without any cards?
Oh, I got a big bag full of Shocklands.
Boo.
Is that your code word for a big bag of dicks?
So you can go eat a big bag of Shocklands.
Just put all those Shocklands in my mouth.
Yeah.